Taita watched from the hillside above the battlefield as the jaws of the trap closed on Trok's army and his chariots were smashed by the rock-filled wagons, the arrows and javelins falling like flights of locusts upon the survivors, when a single bizarre figure caught his eye in the chaos. Ishtar the Mede scampered between the rocks. Like a running hare, he disappeared from sight, only to reappear further up the slope, ducking and dodging. By some chance or magical charm, he avoided the arrows and javelins of Nefer's troops, and at last dived over the crest and disappeared from sight. Taita let him go. There would be time for him later. He watched the climax of the battle, extending all his powers to act as a shield over Nefer during his single combat with Trok at the base of the rock. Even at this distance, he managed to deflect many of Trok's blows that should have been fatal. And when Trok went for the final thrust into Nefer's thigh, his blade might have found a great femoral artery if Taita had not used all his influence to turn the point aside. Since that time long ago, when Taita had saved Mintaka from harm during the encounter with the cobra of the goddess, she had become a subject who responded readily to his influence. She had the intelligence and imagination that opened her mind to him. It was impossible to influence a fool. He had summoned her back to Galala to show herself to Trok at the head of the valley and to lure him into the trap. Then, when she'd stood frozen with horror on the rock above the fighting pair, Taita had bent her to his will once again and put into her mind the impulse to reach down for the javelin that lay at her feet. He had bolstered her right arm as she steadied her aim and threw. Then, as the life went out of Trok, he had rushed down the slope to minister to Nefer and to bind up the wound that had cut so perilously close to the pulsing artery in his thigh. When his brother warriors of the Red Road lifted the young pharaoh onto the litter of spears, Taita, with his duty done for the present, drifted away into the throng. Nobody paid him any heed as he went. He picked up the tracks that Ishtar had left as he escaped out of the narrow valley, and followed them until they were impossible to discern on the earth at the top of the hills, which was baked hard as mosaic tiles by the sun. Taita stopped and crouched down. From his pouch he took out a sliver of dried root and slipped it into his mouth. As he chewed on it, he opened his mind and reached out to detect the Mede's aura, the trace he had left as he passed. As the root sharpened his senses, Taita saw the aura in the corner of his vision. It was a shadow, dirty grey and ephemeral, that vanished when he looked directly at it. Each person had his own aura. Nefersetti, on account of his noble and divine inner being, threw a rosy essence that to Taita was readily detectable. Taita had followed that faint rosy emanation to find Nefer after he'd been mauled by the lion, and he and Mintaka were lost in the desert beyond Dubba. Ishtar the Mede's aura was dark and tainted. Taita stood up and went on again after it, striding out on his long legs with his staff tapping on the stones. Every so often he saw physical confirmation that he was on the right track, by a smudged footprint in a softer patch of earth, or by a recently dislodged pebble. Ishtar had circled round to the south, then come back towards Galala. Taita was alarmed and lengthened his stride. If Ishtar was trying to get close to Nefer again to work some mischief, Taita must intercept him. However, the pursuit led him to one of the chariots Trok had abandoned on his march from the coast. From the wreck, Ishtar had salvaged something, and Taita closed his eyes and worked out what it was. "A water skin," he murmured. And Taita saw where he'd scraped away the earth to drag the skin out from under the side of the capsized chariot. Another dry and empty skin was still hanging there. Ishtar had left it, probably because he knew he could carry the weight of only one full skin. Taita picked up the empty skin and slung it over his shoulder. He left the chariot, with the dead horses in the traces, already beginning to stink, and followed Ishtar onwards. Carrying the water skin with him, Ishtar had gone back towards Galala. When he topped the ridge above the city, he'd crept down to the bank of the closest irrigation canal. The imprint of his knees was clear in the wet clay, where he'd knelt to drink and then to fill the skin he carried. Taita drank himself. After that he filled his own water skin. Then he rose and followed the traces Ishtar had left as he started back eastward, along the road towards Safaga and the coast. Taita strode after him. Night fell, and Taita kept on. Sometimes the aura of the mead faded away completely, but Taita followed the road. At other times it grew stronger, until Taita smelt it, a faint, musty, unpleasant odour. When it was this strong, he could fathom the essence of the mead. He could detect his vindictive and vengeful nature. He divined that Ishtar was frightened and demoralized by the turn that the fates had taken against him, but his powers were still formidable. He constituted a great and real danger, not only to Nefer and Mintaka, but to Taita himself. If he were allowed to escape and regenerate his scattered powers, he might threaten the future of the House of Tomoza and Apepi. Ishtar was one of the higher adepts, an evil one, which made him all the more dangerous. He could certainly overlook his selected victims and conjure up all manner of profanities to bring down disaster on Nefer and Mintaka. He could sicken and sour their love for each other, bring down suffering, miscarriage and plague, pains and disease with no focus or reason, mental aberrations, madness, and eventually death. Even Taita was not immune to his baleful spirit. If he were allowed to escape, Ishtar might gradually erode Taita's powers and frustrate his work. Unless Taita acted now while he had the opportunity to destroy him utterly. The gibbous moon rose over the stark hills and lit Taita's way. He was in that long, swinging stride with which he could cover the ground as swiftly as a mounted man. He could sense that ahead of him Ishtar was unaware that he was being followed, and his pace was much slower. Every hour that passed, Taita felt his aura stronger and nearer. "I will be up to him before sunrise," he thought. And at that moment he doubled over and vomited in a projectile stream onto the stony track. Overwhelmed with a sudden terrible nausea, Taita almost collapsed, but regained his balance and staggered back, wiping the bitter taste of bile from his mouth. "Careless," he rebuked himself angrily. "So close to the quarry I should have taken greater care. The mead has detected me." He drank a little water from the skin, then went forward cautiously. He pointed his staff ahead and swung it slowly from side to side. Suddenly it grew heavy in his hand. He followed that direction and saw ahead of him, glinting in the moonlight, the circle of pale pebbles laid out on the side of the track. "A gift from the mead," he said aloud. Nausea seized him once more, but he choked it back, struck the earth with the staff, and spoke one of the words of power. "Nkube!" His nausea receded, and he could approach the circle closer. "It is not enough that I should break his spell," he thought grimly. "I must turn it back upon the mead." He used the tip of his staff to move one of the pebbles out of the circle, disrupting its power. Now he could squat beside the pattern without experiencing any harm. Without touching any of the pebbles, he leant close and sniffed at them. The smell of the mead was strong upon them, and he smiled with cold satisfaction. "He touched them with his bare hands," Taita whispered. Ishtar had left traces of his sweat on them. Taita could use that faint effluent. Careful not to make the same mistake, he moved the pebbles with the tip of his staff, forming them into a different pattern, an arrowhead pointing in the direction that Ishtar had taken. He took a mouthful of water from the skin and spat it on the pebbles, which shone wetly in the moonlight. Then he pointed his staff like a javelin along the same line as the arrowhead of pebbles. "Kaidash!" he shouted, and felt pressure build up in his eardrums as though he had plunged deeply below the surface of the ocean. Before it became unbearable, it began slowly to abate, and he felt a sense of well-being and pleasure. It was done. He had turned it back upon the mead.